As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Why doesn't eHarmony allow copy and paste in first messages? Because you are unique, and your conversations should reflect that. eHarmony wants you to find someone who will get you. How are you going to know who gets you? If people send you the same generic conversation starters, they message everyone else. Conversations that actually help you get to know each other. Imagine that. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
Hey everybody, this is The Ruck. It's getting exciting. This is the last Ruck but one before your Ruck team disappears to travel first class all around France for the World Cup, or first class-ish. A weekend of magnificent rugby, and I've got two great, magnificent journalists to talk about it. On my left, fighting out of Scotland, the Rugby World editor, Big Al Dimmock. Al, I was with you for most of the weekend, so I don't really need to ask you what you did, but how did you enjoy it? What was the best bit of it?
Yeah, I think you could bill me as frightened from Scotland after watching that South Africa performance, and we'll get into talking about South Africa versus New Zealand. I was at that on Friday night, and then I was at Twickenham with you, Steve. Very different affairs, and we'll get into why they're very different, but that's it now, isn't it? That's the shadow boxing over now. We're into the actual fight proper going forward, and bloody hell, what the hell's going to happen?
Exactly. Also on the panel, fighting out of Pontier. Anyone heard of Pontier? I have. It's a rather nice place. Is Elgin Alderman, the rising star of News International and the Times Group. Elgin, let's start at the end. Fantastic and fascinating game in Paris yesterday.
Absolutely. The atmosphere at Stade de France, if that gave us a flavour for what we're going to see on the opening night between France and New Zealand, then we're in for a remarkable Friday night in Paris. And also Australia, who lost 41-17. Eddie Jones now lost five games in a row. They'll be there as well against Georgia. But there were times where the crowd was so loud that Julien Marchand just couldn't hear the call at the line out, and two dummy throws in a row. But we saw a surprising bit of weakness from France in the pack. But out wide, Antoine Dupont survived an hour, got off the field without an injury, and the backs were in magnificent flow. So they're set up very nicely for their home World Cup.
Okay, that's set up us for to discuss all the weekend's action. We'll be throwing forward to the World Cup, and we will also be naming our best guess as the World Cup winner. Then we'll be doing God or Goddess of the Week. Thanks for joining us. Here we go. Al Dimmock, I think a game on Friday at Twickenham in front of, was it 80,000 people, really got the juices flowing for what's up.
I'll tell you what, fans back home won't like to hear this, but if I was a suit working for Sanzar, I would think about having a game every rugby championship at Twickenham, because they could have doubled the price and sold it out. The atmosphere was electric, weather didn't dampen things at all, it just seemed to be an incredible curtain raiser for the curtain raiser, if that makes sense. And what a performance from South Africa. I mean, the All Blacks, you know, they seemed shell-shocked at the end of the game, and rightly so, because South Africa threw everything at them. And we'll make a big point about the fact that South Africa, due to a late change with an injury to Willie LaRue, went for a 7-1 split on the bench, and everyone went, oh no. To be honest, they had the physical dominance anyway, but when they brought the bomb squad on, it was a real shock for everyone. And we're going to see, we know, the thing with South Africa is we know what's coming in the World Cup. New Zealand knew what was coming, and they couldn't do a damn thing about it.
Oh, the 7-1 thing which you mentioned to me is slightly bizarre, because some players can come on and play as if they've been there all the time, but others come on and take some time to get into the game. 7 forwards is a heck of a lot to bring on all at once,
and it happened the 46th minute of the game as well, so it was a brand new pack. And if you're the New Zealand pack that had been struggling against the South Africans there, it's like, oh, it's the same. And that's the thing, it's the same level of quality. Like, the front row that comes on for the Springboks is international world class front row that could play for anyone in the world. So they're coming on after going, oh, well, Malcolm Marks is nicking ball and scoring tries and looking exceptional, and now we've got to bring on Bongi and Mbonambi, who's just going to be as physical. And to be honest, it just gave an armchair ride to the South African team. But it helps when you've got someone like Cannon Moody, who looks purpose-built to play outside centre. So they'll bemoan the lack of a second playmaker from the bench, because Willy Larue is unbelievably good at running a game from second receiver for them in attack, and that's one of the things that makes the Springboks very special. But it's bizarre, yes, I'd agree with you, but it's completely in character. And hearing the coaches after the game, it seems like we're going to see a fair bit of that in the World Cup, or at least it's an option in the back pocket that they're not worried about using at all.
Yeah, Elgin, it's traditional to say, look, that was only a one-off, and we know the All Blacks will be fantastic in the World Cup. But in your assessment, did the earth really move there? Because anyone who's got their money on the All Blacks would surely now be just that little bit less confident.
I think the earth does move, because such has been New Zealand's dominance in international rugby since international rugby began, that they simply don't lose by 28 points. So it doesn't matter what the occasion is or who the opposition is. If New Zealand only scrape 7 points and concede 35, then that is a huge moment. And as Al said, you know, with South Africa, obviously the focus is always on the bomb squad, but the likes of Moody, and they've got Colby to come back in, they're not as boring as people say they are. And if they do have some of the biggest, baddest forwards in world rugby, then, you know, of course they're going to use them. But then also they have some of the most thrilling backs in world rugby to go with it too. So it was a real statement by South Africa.
Well said.
It's a thing, we could probably talk about this a fair bit, and style of rugby that teams are playing is an interesting topic, particularly when we get to talking about England and just what the hell their identity is at the moment. It's clear that the top bracket of rugby teams in the world at the moment have a distinctive style. South Africa, for all we say about the predictability of how they're going to play, they have a very distinct identity, and it's to allow playmakers like that to get a foothold in the game. I mentioned Willy Larue, he will be a key component of what they do in the World Cup. You know, New Zealand, since Joe Schmidt has come in, there's been a very clear use of ball in the air and contestable kicks, and that's something that they've brought in, you know, after the horrible year that they had by their standards last year. They've really changed things up, and they try and move the ball side to side. Scotland have a very distinctive style of play that they want, you know, everything coming through Finn Russell, trying to get to the wide channels. There's all of that. South Africa's one is one that we'll keep an eye on, because there's some people you speak to, and we had a piece for Rugby World recently where we had former England defence coach Paul Gustard having a look at where people's identities are at the moment, and South Africa seem to be playing a bit more than we've got. Mm-hmm. So when you see someone like Cannon Moody come on and go, he just looks a complete natural, and some of that is obviously his inherent skill set. So he scores a try that was chalked off for being offside, but he, you know, was weaving in and out of defenders. That's a scary proposition to see those kind of guys unleashed. And I think you said it yourself, Stephen. I'm keen to get your view on this, actually. Do you think this is a better version of the Springboks than we saw even 4 years ago?
I do. I should hold my hand up. A leading monthly rugby magazine, to which you're the editor, Rugby World, asked me a few months ago to assess the challenges of the Springboks. I said, they've bloody had it. They're all old. They've been there too long. They're boring as hell. And will you accept my apologies for that? Give me one more chance.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
You can get off your knees now, Steve.
Thank you. You're quite right. I think this is a bock team. We won't be able to make fun of them because, oh, they're just boring, because they aren't. And you know what? They could win the World Cup playing typical bock rugby, but with added extras, which will be fantastic. We'll just go on to the time frame here. It might be a bit confusing, but I do want to go to Elgin now about yesterday's game. For a long time, Aussie were sort of in it, and France was a little bit halting at Elgin. Did France do enough to maintain their status of co-favourites, or were there any weaknesses?
The surprise weakness was that Australia had the better of them at scrum time. Angus Bell in particular was excellent for Australia, not only with his ball carrying, but also at scrum time.
He's had a great few months, Angus Bell.
Yeah. Absolutely. And you had the size of Weenie Artonia going backwards, which is quite something. So that was a surprise. What we did see from France was that, especially in that first half, they did not have much ball or territory, and yet the quite old-fashioned accumulating of a score from Tomas Ramos, who kicked 4 penalty goals during the game and missed another attempt. And it meant that even though Australia had the majority of the opportunities, France built their score, And then in the second half, when there was a yellow card for Suliasi Vunivalu, then they turned it on and they found their enterprise. And suddenly Antoine Dupont was taking quick taps and doing kick passes in his own half. And you had Dupont and Mathieu Jalibert not only making breaks, but also finding their wingers out wide with delicate little chips for tries. And then Damien Penaud running in from halfway with a run chip and chase of his own. So we saw that they had all the flair that we know they have out wide. Jonathan Danty was superb as a hard-running 12, as we know he is. The one weakness, like we said, that you perhaps don't expect to see from them was at the scrum time. But generally, it was a very clinical, efficient 24-point victory.
Interesting about Jonathan Danty, because the first try was scored by Danty in a move that was unbelievably telegraphed, because France threw the ball into a line-out. Danty was flexing his muscles. It was obvious where the ball was going to come to. The Aussie team lined up big forwards against him. They won the ball, drove it. Danty went straight through four big men and scored. I mean, he's wide. He's not actually that big or tall, but I mean, bloody hell, what a force.
Absolutely, and that move that got them up to the try line had started from Danty running straight at Carter Gordon in the first place, so they just did it twice. And if you've got a man like Danty running at a man like Carter Gordon, then you might as well keep on doing it until it stops working. It worked twice in 5 minutes.
I feel for Carter Gordon. You know, he's been chucked into this Australia team with, well, literally zero test match experience. Young man, there's no other official fly halves in that squad. And it's sort of like, it's almost a case of, hold that, please. You know, it's not quite a hospital pack. The interesting thing I heard from the back of that test match yesterday, and it goes back to this point I made about playing style at the moment, is Eddie Jones claiming that Australia played a completely different style for this test match than they were ever going to play. Can a test team afford to chop and change their style, particularly one that's lost five, is it five on the bounce that the Wallabies have lost? Is that great preparation for the World Cup? Maybe it is. I mean, who am I to question the coaching genius of Eddie Jones? But it just seems unless that's just the line that's getting thrown out there, it seems a strange tack for me.
I think it's the usual blather from Eddie, which you're pretty used to, Al. But Ellen, you mentioned the forwards. I mean, when you got Big Arnold and Will Skelton in the second row, and as you said, a much improved scrummage, they were competitive in areas where they're not usually competitive.
Yeah, absolutely. And perhaps maybe this is part of Eddie's plan, that maybe when it comes to the World Cup, he will do a slightly more simplified game plan for Australia. Who knows? Will Skelton was captain on the... In Paris on Sunday. It's interesting to see how he fares with that leadership role. There were signs of him sort of, you know, going up to the younger players and kind of consoling them when things were going wrong. We mentioned Carter Gordon. In contrast with Ramos, you know, he missed three kicks in the first half that would have helped Australia build their score in the same way France had built theirs, but they weren't able to. So you'd think that, you know, the only way is up from 0 out of 3 before half time. But yeah, with the likes of Angus Bell and Will Skelton in that pack, then perhaps that is, as it stands, the area of strength for Australia, and perhaps they should turn to a sort of an Australian style of play.
I think they really do need to fly half. I mean, it was just awful. And as you said, he didn't build any points at all, and none of the three quick kicks were from massive distance. So it's I don't think that Eddie is right to say, oh, we're going to turn it all around. That just sounds like an Eddieism. But they do have something a little bit more up front. France, Al, we know Fiku, we know Danty. We know Damien Penaud on the wing. If France get the ball wide during this World Cup, it's good night, isn't it?
Well, I mean, how many years have we been seeing this now? Like, Damien Penaud, sometimes I wonder what's going on through players' heads. It often seems like with Damien Penaud, he doesn't know what's going on through his head. Things will just sort of unfold in front of him, and it's like, well, the world just seems to keep shaping around me somehow. He's exceptional in that way, in that, you know, how many, for example, a couple of times in the last few years, we've seen games that seem dead and buried, and France are out of it, and Damien Penaud pulls a try out of nothing. It's scary, and, you know, I've heard a lot of people suggest that the fear for France is losing Ntamack. Jalibert is a quality replacement. It's just needs to get that level of confidence with them. But I'll tell you what, just talking in general terms, based on the back of what we saw on Friday night, look at how I'm going to pull what I've spoken about and what Elgin's spoken about there together, is the interest level in that opening game of the Rugby World Cup. It's already going to be a cracker because it's Friday night, prime time, going to be on ITV in this part of the world. It's already had everything. But the way that New Zealand got humbled by South Africa, they've been bitten. So they're wounded. They have to come back. They're playing against France, who, as Elgin points out, gave their fans something to cheer for at home. Steve, you've been to every World Cup. Like, can you remember an opening game that has this much excitement, electricity about it?
Absolutely not. No, it's just huge. And you wonder what sort of size stadium they would need to take everyone who wanted to go in it. I'm just looking back. I mean, one of the things is you do get... you kick off early, usually in the World Cup. They'd gone away from explosive start. I mean, they had All Blacks versus Tonga in 2011. The explosive start thing, because then they think, well, there's going to be better games further on down the line. But as you say, to set the tone in front of live terrestrial TV is unbelievable. Are we all going to be there?
I will be in Bordeaux in anticipation of Wales's first match.
I'll be there for that one. I can't wait,
lads. It's going to be absolutely sensational. The next day, England are playing, which is relatively sensational, and then Scotland and South Africa. So what a start! What a start! We'll all be on our backsides after 3 days. There was another game at Twickenham. Elgin, you and I were there. The first 5-8 minutes when England went 8-0 up. They ran the ball back and forth. Ford was trying to boss it, so people were steaming in, and then they switch a play, etc. Our fond hopes of caused by that pretty much dynamited almost by half time, weren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. There was a torrential downpour of rain that had people pitch side running back higher up in their seats, which perhaps affected proceedings thereafter, because after that, suddenly, there was that spell towards the late end of the first half where there were just mistakes after mistakes, and Fiji's line-out wasn't going great, and it was 8-3 at half-time, wasn't it? And there didn't seem to be much happening, with the exception of Fiji's try that they had ruled out, which was a precursor of something we would see later when Celestina Ravatemada broke through brilliantly up through midfield, found Waisea Naithalevu, but the pass was forward. But then 3 minutes into the second half, they did exactly the same again, with in a slightly different position. And thereafter, it was just a case of, in a way that people perhaps might have predicted, when it came down to who had the ability to break the game open with a slight gap and a bit of good handling, it was Fiji who had more tools in the box than England did when it came to it.
I don't think England had a box then, but with tools in, did they? But we're complaining about rugby being all box kicking, too much kicking, and the old individual brilliance has gone out of it, and the ability to create tries in the backs. Blimey, some of those Fijians were out of this world, weren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, Ravatemada, who had a shaky start because he was the one that gave Johnny May the outside for England's try, and you thought, oh, this could be a bad day for him. And then after that, everything he touched turned to gold. He did the same to Johnny May down the side, and found Naithalevu's supporting run. He was busting more of a gut to get there than the England defenders were. And then in a similar situation, you had from that scrum in the second half where Fiji, sort of under pressure, went down the blind side, and Vinaya Hambosi, the other wing, just caught the England forwards napping. Ben Earl was guarding there and just sort of dozed off, and Hambosi just picked up and went, and he was away. And it was just that slight speed of thought, that ability to see the gaps around the breakdown that made the difference, really.
We've got to come on to England in a minute, but they're just the same question I posed to Elgin, really. There was some... You think that Fiji weren't quite as strong up front as I thought they were fine, but isn't it lovely to see creative stuff in the Fijian tradition and almost in a way that rugby sometimes could be in the old days?
Well, it's an interesting point, this, because Simon Raiwaluigi, the head coach, after the game said, listen, whenever anyone talks about Fiji, they think it's all offloading all the deck. They think it's sevens. But actually the basis of this game was one up front. I think the scrum was not as neat as Fiji would like it, and I still think if England were to glean any positives from this game, it's that their scrum is still all right. It's still functioning okay. But Fiji get loose ball from their own scrum, they can create a try from it, which is what happened late in the second half. But the basis of this game was Fiji just got over the gain line. Now, what you can talk about as well is, okay, I feel a bit sorry for referee Jaco Pyper, because everyone's got GPS strapped to them to measure the distance they took. He was just walking shuttles between the 10-metre lines in that first half, because it was box kick after box kick after knock on after knock on. You could have strapped his GPS to a snail and he would have got the same data, I think, from that first half. But in the second one, Fiji got over the gain line, when Fiji have got front football like that, they can have a little bit of magic. But the thing is that it was that momentum that was getting the tries in the second half. So it wasn't all just streaming through or sidestepping someone or going through. It was just England couldn't live with the constant reloading of that Fiji attack. And I'll tell you what, I'm going to throw it back to Elgin here, because obviously you're following Wales for a large part of the beat at the Rugby World Cup. What do you think their takeaways will be from that game? Because it seems like with the rise of Ndrua in Super Rugby, that they've, as well as the superstars that we've got playing all around the world for Fiji, there's a core of guys that have played together week in, week out, that have been conditioned together, and they've got a bit of structure around them, so that when you see someone like Caleb Munts playing 10, who can kick, who looked like he wasn't going to miss kicks on Saturday as well, when you can structure a game around a player like that, suddenly are Fiji looking more dangerous than when they've seen them in years in the past?
I think the first thing Wales will be thinking is Celestino Ravitamada isn't even the first choice wing, and he was man of the match, because you've got Tua Sova to come back in possibly, and Vi Nicolo wasn't playing either. Mm-hmm. Then you've got Bottia to come back in the back row, who was their starting inside centre 4 years ago. Now he's their starting open side flanker. It was clear that there was a clear attacking framework when Fiji had the ball. They had their three forwards in a pod at first receiver, like you always see, and then you often had Semi Randrandra running out the back as the option there. So there was a clear plan, and there was a clear idea of what they wanted to do with ball in hand. It wasn't from that they gleaned their chances. That was just how they sort of went about their business. And as I mentioned earlier, it was those bits where you just doze off slightly and leave a gap. That the try that was ruled out was quite similar, because Ellis Genge was sort of tracking around the back of the ruck and thought quite late on, oh, I'll hit this and see what happens. And as he hit it, the ball came out straight away, and suddenly Ravitamada at first receiver sees Ollie Chesson by himself with quite a bit of space around him and steps inside and goes away. So you just have to be, Wales will just know that they have to be on their mettle around those rucks whenever Fiji get the ball, because they've got so many players that can just break through there at any one moment.
Come on to England next but one. But as these matches have gone on, the summer series or warm-up matches, the crowd have descended to another level of resignation and also anger. Every match, we walk along the concourse back to where we work in the press room, there's been more and more and sharper anger about it. And people are really, really cheesed off. People were saying, oh, look, we enjoyed watching Fiji. What the earth is going to happen at the World Cup? I think basically what the way things are needed, not Steve Borthwick coming out to say, we're doing our best, we're working hard, and then a dead silence from Twickenham. It needed someone from Twickenham, and needs it even today, to come up with a megaphone and lift morale, tell people to go to France in good heart, blah, blah, blah. At the moment, the air of resignation and the lack of noise from anybody is unbelievable. That's a kind of off-field thing. Al, you've mentioned scrum. I don't think you thought England were dominant, but they were decent. Where else did they have anything to make a hole in the coming World Cup? Never mind against Fiji, but against New Zealand.
Context is important here, because we can't ignore what England's group is like. Because England's group is... The draw 3 years ago has helped them massively here. So their biggest game is Argentina. But they can lose that and go through. If they win their other games, if they look all right in their other games, they'll go through, and then they get a quarterfinal against... I mean, the other pool is fascinating, because Fiji are in the mix with Wales and Australia, and we've just talked about two of those at least. The fun thing is that we can't really predict where that one's going to go, similar to Pool B with Scotland, South Africa and Ireland. I mean, what the hell's going to happen with that group? So England are helped by the draw that they've got. They can almost, and obviously you, as an England fan, you don't want to hear this, but they could lose the first game against Argentina and still come out all right. Is that papering over the cracks? Because for the first time, I think, ever in my job, I thought, oh, Vox Pops would be interesting, wouldn't they? Like, actually, for those that don't know, Vox Pop, like going out and speaking to people, it's almost the Daz doorstep challenge kind of thing, is going out and asking fans what they make of it, because the rancor is real. Once you get past the price that people are paying for tickets and the fact that it's jammed tomorrow yet again, it's that the rugby that they're seeing isn't even entertaining and they're still losing. You get all that, you can really feel a sense of something. So England can stumble their way through the Rugby World Cup group. Is that firing people up? Is that a plan for the future? It'd be interesting to know, because I've made a point of also speaking to some former players which is why I brought up style of play here. And one of the things that we've been talking about is England are so married to this almost statistics-based style of play where the ball goes up in the air and you try and feed off scraps and you want to have solid everything else. That's fair enough if it's bearing fruit, but at the moment, people don't seem to be on the same page. A lot of former players and current players I've spoken to are talking about the lack of a secondary playmaker, and it's interesting that the only time I saw the England fans getting on their feet for England was when, at a panic, almost, it felt like Marcus Smith was at fullback, and there was a second playmaker on the field, and it felt like England were trying to put the ball through their hands. That felt almost like a roll of the dice. We've seen Freddie Stewart start at 15, game after game after game after game, and for all the things he's good at in the air when it's not teeming down with rain, is he's not a secondary playmaker. And if England are going to change things now, it almost asks the question, what have they been doing for months? And that's the mentality that fans are taking in to the start of this World Cup. It's not a great place to be right now.
I think Freddie Stewart, you almost feel painful assessing him because he's such a great, or he was a great fielder of the ball and had such presence. He actually dropped three of the first four balls, and he does not have a game apart from that. God bless the lad. Middle of the Six Nations on a horrible pitch somewhere, maybe, but you know he's not going to win the World Cup for England. Elgin, was it their worst performance? And where could you see the foundation stones of some kind of different approach?
As Al mentioned there about that kind of roll of the dice with Marcus Smith, as you were saying that, I was thinking back to what it used to be like when Wales would bring James Hook on and they would just go, oh, go on, James, do something fancy. He would never really, well, obviously, throughout his career, he did get chances from the start, but there was a frequent sense throughout his career that it was just, oh, we'll throw him on and he'll turn it around. And he did it sometimes and he didn't do it other times. What was nice to see from Marcus Smith, and sometimes he does get, you know, a bit of abuse online for that big celebration he did when he scored, but it was nice to see a bit of passion or something along those lines. You know, afterwards, I think in the press conferences, you know, Steve Borthwick's just natural demeanour, I think a lot of us sit there thinking it would be quite nice if there was sort of an admittance that actually England fans do think that this might be the lowest ebb in the country's rugby history. You know, England, no matter how bad they've been in the past, have always found a way to beat the teams that are outside of the Rugby Championship in the Six Nations. And with the exception of an uncapped match against Canada 30 years ago, that is. But here, they finally came a cropper to a team from outside the so-called Tier 1 nations, to use that phrase. I know of at least one rugby fan who had a ticket for the quarterfinal that he thought England would be in and has since offloaded it just because I think even if England get there, he's not particularly keen about seeing what they do. The thing I would say is that if they do make it out of the group, no matter how they make it out, then obviously they still have a chance of doing something, because we saw that with England in 07. I mean, France in 2011 basically just stopped listening to their coach, and they had Morgan Parrott fly half, and they had no discernible approach to anything on the field, and yet somehow they got to the final and lost 8-7 and probably should have won. So if they do make it through somehow, anything could happen, but now there are big question marks over whether they make it through at all.
Let me just ask you about one individual and the lack of an England defence. Kevin Sinfield, it must be one of the most nicest, most selfless, most gritty, most dedicated friends anyone could ever have.
Absolutely, yeah.
And he's obviously in his spare time, I don't mean that at all, but he's England's defence coach. That's what he's there for. And are we now putting question marks against him, or has he just not managed to sort it out yet, or is it the fault of the players, or what? Because defence is absolutely rank.
It has to be discussed, for sure, because, I mean, even by the dint of the fact that England head coach Steve Borthwick mentioned defence several times, he refused to be pulled on whether it was a system failure or individual errors. He just kept saying, we were slipping off tackles, we need to right that, we'll be working very, you know, as you can imagine, we'll be working very hard and blah, blah, blah. As if we haven't been doing that for months. It needs to be addressed. Kevin Sinfield had huge success in a year and a half with Leicester Tigers, because they were part of a rebuild. And that Leicester Tigers team, if you start drinking now, bring up team identity before, that was a very clear style of play for Leicester Tigers under Steve Borthwick. Kevin Sinfield came in for the 18 months of that, and it paid huge dividends. It is not working for England right now, and maybe it's a question of expertise at this level possibly is something that has to be discussed when we're talking about a test team, because, you know, 18 months in rugby union and a failed tenure at Leeds Rhinos is what we've got in the back pocket for this one. So commands huge respect. I think you have to ask a question as well, is about the rapport amongst this team. And it's, there's so many people that need to put their hands up when we're talking about the performance of this England team, because it's almost not a surprise that England had to go back to basics and try and undo all of the work that had been done before and start over again. It doesn't seem to be working in a short-ish period of time. Meanwhile, by the way, Simon Raiwaluyi with Fiji has had shorter as his tenure as head coach, and it seems to be working for them, albeit the, you know, the gap between where they were and the ceiling, the amount of talent that they've got, they're able to reach that. But England have talent. That's the thing. So where is the breakdown here? Is it that players don't like the messages they're getting and aren't listening to them? Are the messages not good enough? Can you get past that if everyone's on the same page and you turn around and go, you know what, this is going to be grim, but we're going to get through it, and if we're all on the same page, we're going to play much better? They don't seem to have that level of cohesion yet, and it's a question mark of why they're like that. Because if you throw one coach under the bus and go, oh, well, it's Kevin Sinfield, so we're going to have to change all that, I don't think it's magically going to get better.
Mm.
So how do we get to, it's a huge question, I don't think we could possibly answer it here, but how do you get from where things are now to having a level of cohesion, or everyone just singing off the same page and just playing a style of rugby that works? Because at the moment, there are just too many gaps.
Okay, the homeland law has benefited Fiji enormously, also benefited Samoa, who came really, really close, Elgin, to Ireland, and could have won. Sort of thought they were going to hold on, but they looked much improved with their influx of players. Is this another thorn in England's side that we should start worrying about?
Now, yes, in the pouring rain of Bayonne's Stadion d'Orge, they were one line out away from beating Ireland. Jordan Taufua were off the bench, and having started the match with Stephen Louitua, Theo McFarlane, Chris Fury, those are all great players that are very familiar to Gallagher Premiership fans. And like I say, yeah, towards the end of the game, if they could have nailed the set piece, they had that line-out 5 minutes out with 2 minutes to go. They had Lima Sopawanga shortly before that kicking dead with a penalty. So two gilt-edged chances late on to snatch that win. Yes, it wasn't Ireland at their best. It wasn't a first-choice Ireland team. But even just to come that close to beating any Ireland team, and an Ireland team, many of whom are going to the World Cup, then suddenly now, yes, Samoa are another team that England will have to worry about. You mentioned the rule of the players that have been able to re-qualify after a stand-down period. I've already mentioned Lima Sopoanga at 10. Often it is a controlling 10 that the likes of Fiji and Samoa need, and they have someone like him now. They also had Christian Leliafano on the bench, who's obviously done that job for Australia before, and he could play 12 as well. And then, you know, I already mentioned some of the forwards, but to go with Paul Aloa Emile, the tight end prop, you know, they've got Vui Theo McFarland, whose basketball-style passing play we all enjoy in the Premiership, to go with Fritz Lee and Stephen Louitua in the back row. Those are very good players that if Silala Mapusua can get them all, you know, playing off the same sheet, then suddenly, yes, they're a big challenge for England too.
For years in the Times and Sunday Times and also Rugby World, we've battered on for years about what the world game is missing by undervaluing, underfunding these teams. Okay, they've finally got the homeland thing. Still a lot of ground to cover. But the reason I'm even more excited about this, even more excited than the box and the blacks, etc., is that it could be, we could see a vision of where rugby could be in four, eight years, providing the not extra finances, providing the finances are equal for everybody.
Interestingly, Simon Raiwaluyi, the Fiji head coach, talked about this after the game, and he said, look, it's great. Like, look at the improvements that are being made. He made a point of talking about funds that have been made available from World Rugby, and they've got High Performance Centre now in Fiji that they've been using. There's almost more consistent work to identify talent. Fiji have never lacked for talent, that's for sure. But being able to keep a handle on it better than before, and he says, you know, things can and will and should improve even more than now. And the excitement level was the sort of the raising of the floor, in that we're all talking about how competitive this Rugby World Cup could be, because the top 6, 7, 8 nations in the world are all pretty exciting, current England performances aside. But actually, it's everyone else seems to be raising the game. Now, the big question marks about that will be the team that have got amateur and semi-professional players in it. They will still struggle. Romania being dropped into Pool B seems almost cruel at this point with the level of play that they've got at the moment. But certainly everyone else, it's something to be excited about for sure.
Al, your older, the country of your birth, I was in Scotland last Friday. They are daring, not to dream, daring to hope.
Well, it's interesting. For the last outing before they head to France against Georgia at home, you thought, okay, let's see where they are. Just, you know, let's see how high morale can get just before leaving the country. Halftime, it was 6-0 to Georgia, and you thought, oh no. Like, could this be the most Scottish performance of all time? Second half, not a breeze, but they played more like themselves. They got their 5 tries by just playing the style of rugby that suited them and being smart about it. And certainly, yes, Scotland head to a Rugby World Cup more confident than they've ever been. But again, we come back to this draw, and it's what a cracker of a first game to come, by the way, because if we're excited about France versus New Zealand, I think we all have every right to be excited about Scotland versus South Africa as well, because it should, if everything goes to plan, should be a phenomenal game of rugby and very exciting. Scotland, though, the intrigue for them will be right through the Rugby World Cup pool, because there are just so many. I mean, I'm lucky enough to be heading to Scotland versus Ireland later on in that pool, and that game is going to be unbelievable. I mean, staking everything on a test match almost to see who ends up going through, and that pool is phenomenal. So yes, there is confidence, but with the Scots, there's always a hint of caution behind it, and perhaps a few tears ready to fall out in case they're needed. But yeah, certainly a good result to end.
So, well spoken, lads. All the warm-up matches are done, and England's warm-down matches are also done. I'm going to ask the lads now and put them on the spot, and this will rebound on you massively if we get it all wrong. Who are the favourites for the World Cup? We'll let Al cogitate and go to Elgin first.
France, for me, still, because just the wave of support behind them, the thrilling attack play we saw against, admittedly, you know, it is in Australia that have now lost 5 games in a row, but we knew that was there, and we've seen them do that to the All Blacks, and we've seen them do it to everyone. We've seen them do it to devastating effect against England at Twickenham in the Six Nations. If they can sort their scrum, which I'm sure they will be able to, which was the one surprise weakness, then they have just about everything going for them. And as long as, you know, Mr. Dupont can stay fit as well, and he did get off the field after an hour. There was a slight hiccup where it looked like he might have hurt himself in one incident, but he's made it through to that first game and the tournament that, you know, he is set to bestride as the man of the tournament. It does seem to be pointing, if all goes their way, pointing France's way. But obviously, there are 3 very good teams and a few others that can shock people that could upset that particular apple cart. But I will go for France right now.
France for Elgin. Al?
I've changed my mind on this several times over the last couple of weeks. A few weeks ago, I considered putting money on the All Blacks and just thinking, you know, for all the bleating about the way that they'd played rugby in the last year, losses to France and Ireland, you know, there was a lot of weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth, and I thought, you know what, it's a World Cup, New Zealand will come through. I just think that potentially they might get ground down by the emotional challenge of playing as well, and I think South Africa are just travelling really well. So I think South Africa are in a very good place right now.
I'd love it to be France, South Africa in the final. I'm going to go for South Africa as well by the tiniest margin, and there's so much the water to flow down the Seine till it comes up. But I just think South Africa by a tiny margin in whoever they play is bound to be a great final. Next up, we name our god or goddess of the week.
The train is now approaching junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Oh.
You want my god or goddess of the week?
Yes, please.
I am going to go with, I mentioned him earlier, Simon Raivoluhi. He's always been an outspoken fella about what's going on in the Pacific Islands and the good that's being done there. He headed out as high-performance coach, and then when Vern Cotter packed his bags and off he went, he stepped into the breach at short notice, and things seem to be travelling well for Fiji, and he'll answer any question you ask him about what's going on with Fiji out there, and that's very refreshing. But it also comes from a team that we just love to watch, and to not moan about the amount of time he's had with the team, because, well, since time immemorial, the time that these teams have had together before World Cups has been shorter and shorter. So yeah, I just think what a fantastic job, and I mean the Fiji team as a whole, just they deserve every second of joy that they got from that result against England, their first ever win over them.
In fact, Simon Raivoluhi, your choice, Al, is fated wherever he's been. He's been, you know, he was at Newport, then he went to Paris. He's seen as an absolute giant wherever he's been, so that's a good one. I'm going to stay with Fiji as well, because Luke Ntaghi up front, tight head prop, you wouldn't call him svelte. In fact, the reason that Fiji's, it's like having four men in the front row, because he's the size of two, but I just thought he even showed around the field. He hung on like grim death, and he's given Fiji something that they've never had in previous World Cups. So big Luke Ntaghi, the tight head prop, is my god. Elgin.
Well, I'm delighted Dims has gone for Simon Raivoluhi. As you said, Steve, he was a legend at Rodney Parade back when I was a little 7-8-year-old boy watching rugby there. And as a thank you for my dad helping out with the Fiji team when they played Wales on the medical side, he actually gave me one of his training tops as a gift, Simon, and it remains the biggest item of clothing I've ever seen in my life. And it still doesn't fit me, and I'm 6'4" now, and it still does not fit me. But I rather than Simon, I'm going for Angus Bell, the Australia prop, who, scrummaging has never been regarded as Australia's strong point, but we had the sight of Winnie Artonio and the other members of France's pack going backwards at the Stade de France on Sunday. But in addition to that, Angus, who is, I think, something like 6'3" and 20 stone, you don't miss him on the field. He was also phenomenal as a ball carrier. So he's got both aspects nailed thus far. So that's something for Fiji and Wales to look out for in the World Cup.
That's it for now. Thank you for listening, everybody. Next week, we're going to have a colossal pre-World Cup pod on Monday as normal and before departing for the big one. So keep with us. Thanks for listening.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, I'm Guy Raz, and on my show, Wisdom from the Top, I talk with CEOs and business leaders about the toughest challenges of their careers.
There's lots of ways to measure success.
Sometimes a company has to bet against itself.
We wanted to set ourselves apart by having a point of view.
Businesses really impact people's lives in pretty fundamental ways.
On Wisdom from the Top, some of the greatest business leaders of our time share their intimate stories of leadership, innovation, and transformation. Stories you won't hear anywhere else. Check out Wisdom from the Top only on Luminary. Now, back to your show.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.